Welcome to Software Testing Unleashed, the podcast for testers, developers, and all software people who want to create best quality software. My name is Richie. I'm a software quality coach, author, and keynote speaker, and happy to bring you an episode live from the HUSDEV Conference 2025 in Budapest. HUSDEV is one of the greatest conferences I've ever been to. Top quality talks, amazing people, and that unique mix of friendly and intense atmosphere you only find at truly great events. If you have ever get the chance, go there. Seriously, you will love it. My guest today is Peter Feldhasi. Peter is in the quality field about 20 years now, and for more than 10 years in the field of test automation. He has also authored the ISTQB syllabi Test Automation Engineer and Test Automation Strategy. And so we talked about test automation and how to deal with that in our projects. How can we think about test automation on different test levels, looking at our test pyramid, and clarified some keywords round about the test automation area. And now, enjoy the episode. Before we start, one quick note. Do you know this nagging uncertainty that you might have missed some crucial test when it is time to hit the release button? And did these worries ever turn into customer complaints because something was really broken? And there's a way out. TeamScale shows you all untested changes so you never miss one again. On December 3rd, they will show how this works and which success stories it achieved over the past 13 years. Join now online and for free. Visit tul.fm/ts. You also find the link in the show notes. And now enjoy the episode. Hello, Peter. Great to have you on the show here.
Thank you very much, Richard. How you doing?
Oh, fine, thank you. I like the HUSDEV so much. It's such a great conference here. I'm very, very so familiar. It's my first, but I'm feeling like I was there ever.
Yeah, it has a really good vibe. And yeah. You know, it has evolved from a small conference all the way to such a big international one.
Yeah, yeah. And it still is look very intense. There are so many people, about 700 people here, but you have direct contact with everyone, and it's a nice place.
Yeah, and you can easily connect to anyone, during the breaks and even during the sessions if you just feel like connecting. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, yeah. Peter, you are an expert for test automation, and I read in your abstract the story that I always see at companies. They are buying a test automation tool because it's fancy, it's new, it's good salesman or whatever, and then they have no strategy and no idea what to do and how to deal with it. And I like that. I like to solve this issue. So it's good to have you here and to get rid of this strategy and take a better strategy on implementing test automation.
Yeah, the thing is, and I'm glad you highlighted this, because for me, I'm tool agnostic. Yeah. I don't care what the tool is. Of course, I do care, like for certain projects, there are certain test automation tools or other tools that fit better there, like an Angular one, probably I would use Cypress, but for something where like there's a team that has been using Sunny forever, would I go with a Cypress or Playwright or anything else? Probably not. They already know Selenium.
Yeah.
So we would just pick that. But ultimately what matters is what is the problem that we are solving and what is the architecture. And usually I like to go with some lightweight test automation architecture, but we still need to know where we integrate into the whole ecosystem and what type of testing and what stages.
Yeah.
I think that's the answer that we usually need to address at the beginning.
Yeah.
Then the tooling can come afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's good. That's great. I think to highlight this question, why are we doing that, is very important, because test automation is often said, yeah, sure, we are doing test automation because everyone is doing test automation, but that's cannot be the reason.
Yeah, it's I think, like, if you think about it, like more than 10 years ago and more than 10 years ago, like people were saying that manual testing is dying and everything is going to be automated. Is it true now?
Not really.
Not really, yeah. Of course, there's more test automation now, more companies who picked it up who previously only did manual testing, so that's great. But again, like the question is, what do you want to address? What are the challenges that you have? And where do you have test automation as the solution? What is the value that is brought by it? Mm. Maybe test automation is a solution for what you are doing, but if you're not doing it the right way or with just too many people, maybe you're spending more money on what you compared to what is the return on investment.
Yeah, yeah. And, and what are typical goals companies want to achieve with test automation? What are the problems they want to solve with it?
I think that's quite too many. So let me try to think some. Like I can give some more relatively more recent example. Yeah. There was a gaming company that I assessed their current situation. So where do we start? We figure out what's going on. So and that's not just about their current coding practices, current existing test automation solutions, but overall, like where the defects come from. And we turned out that during 8 weeks, an 8 week period, they found almost 5,000 defects.
Yeah.
So what do you want to address?
Yeah.
That, like, okay. And it also turned out that they are able to resolve only 30% of the defects. So what happens, every like couple of months, they have to spend 2 or 3 sprints on just defect fixing. So their velocity goes down to 0. So that's another thing. Like, if I have better QA practices, and I am able to bring in test automation to help with these changes, that's the value that you can bring in. That maybe the resolution is going to be 50% now. Maybe I'm not going to report 5,000 defects. Maybe I'm only reporting 2,000 now because I'm finding the issues earlier in the life cycle. So that's something that is a reason for test automation.
I understand. Yeah. So really to take care about what are you solving? What is the problem you want to solve with test automation? Yeah. And when a team then has this goal set, what is a good way to create a test strategy for test automation? So, because we can do so many things, and what do we do 2026? Maybe because the podcast episode will then be published. So what is the way to get to this strategy?
Mm-hmm. So if it's 2026, then I'm pretty sure AI is going to be in the equation.
Yeah, it will.
I think there are things that were true already like 20 and 30 years ago that are still true today, even with Gen AI in the equation. What's the scope of testing and what is your approach to testing, hence the test strategy, really is going to be custom tailored to all of the different projects, or if it's enterprise test strategy, then all of the different organizations. You can have some generic approaches that you can custom tailor afterwards. I personally like to do first discover, do an assessment, and for example, show the test automation pyramid that, hey, these are the different types of testing that we identified, and this is the amount of test automation that you are doing on these different levels. And it's great because you don't have to be technical to understand the current situation.
Yeah.
So even if I'm talking to a C-suite who is not technical but has the money, I can convince them that, yes, you have a lot of focus on UI level, but you're still finding defects later off and spending a lot of money on testing. Well, maybe you could do shift left testing and start doing that earlier. But I can only explain it once I'm showing it visually. And then I can show that, okay, maybe 6 months later, this is where we can get. Not the ideal pyramid shape, mm-hmm. which, by the way, is usually not the real goal, but mostly I like to go with what can we do within 6 months.
This is a very nice approach, I think, because it takes automation on another level, because usually when we go to companies, say we do test automation, they understand UI testing, or the other understand unit testing, and the third one understand API testing. But to look at the pyramid, you see, okay, we have test automation on each level of this, and can think about how can this deal together. Yeah.
People forget about it because they don't even know what an API contract is.
Yeah, that's a really good approach. And what are the steps when we have this picture of the testing pyramid and think, okay, we have automation on each level to get the way to the tool? To what are the steps to get there, to generate an architecture or something like that?
Uh-huh. Oh, okay, so let me try to be brief here, because a lot of thoughts in my mind. So first of all, yes, the architecture. So you need, like, okay, let's start with the pyramid. You see the current state and the future state. So you have the delta that gives you the scope of work for the next 6 months. So if, for example, your scope of work is to have more functional API testing and to introduce contract testing, that's what's going to be in your strategy, that you are going to be focused on these two types of testing and automating them. Then you can see, like, do you already have API testing? And if yes, is it already automated? So do I have to even build the framework or not? Or if I do I have to spend weeks on it? Maybe I just go with something that is already a pretty well-built framework, like say RestAssured.net. You don't really have to create additional libraries. So what happens is that you start thinking about all these aspects, you start writing it down, make your plan, and then actually try it out. Like, let's make a POC. Is this tool actually going to provide me what I'm looking for? And once I have, basically that's the tool's evaluation period. Once I understand which tool is going to be the best fit for our project, that's where what I'm going to be leveraging for expanding later on. I also need to understand what are the test cases that I need to build. If I'm creating a lot of API tests, do I still need some of the UI tests there? So again, thinking about that. But that's the delta that I mentioned before.
But when I come to these different levels in the test pyramid, often I cannot decide, is this maybe already done in unit testing, or should we that better do at UI testing? So what's coming to my mind, you have to work together over the different levels, together with the developer, with the UI tester, or whatever you have there.
You do have to, but it's so first of all, yes, it's very important to understand what's already existing on the different levels. But it's also important to know that what you covered in unit level is not exactly the same way of testing it as on, let's say, on service level or on UI level. So you might still test something on UI level that is already unit tested, but the goal of the unit testing is more of understanding the quality of the code.
Yeah.
While on UI level, you want to understand whether at the end everything works as intended. Once everything is integrated, you are seeing it visually, and you are able to go through the user journeys that the users go through. They don't go through the code. Yeah. They go through the user journeys.
Yeah. So it's a different approach there.
It is. And a different kind of testing value.
Yeah. There is for all this test automation thinking, we have at the ISTUB this test automation engineer and the test automation strategist, Syllabi. You wrote that too. You are one of the authors who built it, that syllabus. And when I often talk to people, there are different layers mentioned in the ISTQB, like a generic test automation architecture and test automation architecture, test automation framework, and a solution. And often in practice, the people do not understand, what does this mean? What are these for? I have my Selenium, I have my Cypress. What is the rest? So can you give us a brief explanation about these four layers and what ISTQB meant with that?
Okay, so I will try to be as simple in describing them as possible. So think about it that we can go top to bottom or bottom to top, doesn't matter, but GTA, generic. So it's all about like a generic understanding what a framework will need eventually. Like, I'm going to start building a framework from scratch. What do I need for it to work and to be able to integrate it into the whole solution in general? And these are what are the generic capabilities of a test automation architecture? That's what the GTA tells you. Now, the TAA, the test automation architecture, is about a concrete test automation architecture. You are working for someone, so your TAA is going to be very different than mine because I'm working for someone else.
Yeah.
So, and even like within a company, there could be multiple TAAs. So that TAA is an actual concrete design of a test automation architecture. The GTA is not a concrete design.
Mm-hmm.
Next step is the test automation solution. The test automation solution is the implementation of the TAA. So the TAA basically gives you a blueprint on how you are going to be building it in the future. And then the actual implementation is the test.
Okay.
Once you have the test, within the test, you have the TEF, the test automation framework. So it's a smaller part of the whole system, because the test automation solution isn't just the framework. It's also the integration to pipelines, the integration to different management systems. If you think about GenAI, you have MCP. You can leverage that for bringing in AI agents to your Cursor or Windsurf and bring in test cases. And now you can vibe code your test automation with relevant data. So that's what's happening. That's also part of the solution. So, which is not the part of the framework. The framework are the three layers, the test scripts, the business logic layer, and then the code libraries layer.
Yeah. Okay. Now we have clarification about this keywords. I'm very happy to have it here in the podcast so everybody can listen to it. And now all people can know it. So when we take a look at test automation 2026, you mentioned already AI, and there is also the keyword about agents who are dealing with test automation. What do you think is the real part that AI brings now into test automation in a practical way, not just that the tool has a name AI in it?
Yeah. It's good that you mentioned it, because I think it's a key difference between having AI mentioned, AI capabilities, versus like actual real agentic value provided by that tool or platform. I think there are a couple of things here. One is, of course, the prompting, but I think that's, of course, it's not the past, like simple chats, but it's we are moving more to the agentic world that you highlighted. So having agents, which means that I have a bunch of different tasks, and some of that takes a lot of time, or I'm not that happy to do it. But I'm very happy that I can ask an AI agent to generate that for me, so I can focus on something that I'm more excited about. So I can be more efficient this way. That's something that's already changing, but I think next year it's going to be even more of a thing. MCP, so we already had and have RAG. So I think the ability to bring in enterprise data already existed even before MCP. I think the key difference is that I think for more people and more teams, it is more accessible with MCP. And inside your ID, that's just amazing. Like, I think that's what is a huge difference, because if I want to keep working in the ID and don't want to open additional tabs for whatever reason, then that's fine. I can work from my Cursor or Windsurf or whatever. And that's what I'm more comfortable with. And I can still have all the generation from those agents.
And will the AI take over the test automation creation too? Or is this a way which is now feasible?
That's a question I cannot fully answer yet. I have some doubts about like what's going to happen. What's clear is that when I generate something with ChatGPT or Cloud or whatever, then I still need to make changes. So first of all, that means that I still need to learn more about like how I can configure my agents better and how I can bring in more relevant data and ensuring that the relevant data is used. That's one thing. Second, I still believe that the human in the loop is important, but the difference is that now it's more focused on coding, because if the test cases are generated by an agent and a tester can cover that for you, what happens is now that a developer can cover the test automation aspects. So that's, let me hint that idea now. And I think a year from now or half a year from now, we will see it better. But I think that's kind of the way we are going now.
I see. Yeah.
And I don't want to scare anybody. Hopefully I did not.
I think we cannot predict the future. So, but we can to create it a little bit and to think about it and what can be happen in the next year? Yeah.
Actually, I had a teacher, a professor at the university where I graduated. And in the first semester, what he told us is that we shouldn't be preparing for what is the current trend and what are the current best practices. We should try to figure out what's going to be the next thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that mentality is a huge mindset shift.
Yeah, it's very right what you say. Yeah, yeah. When and now somebody hears this episode and sits in a team where just testing is done manually, and he said, okay, but we have to do test automation, and I get my team together. What should we think first? What can we go? What are the first steps we can do in practical to start on with test automation in our project?
So my first question would be, is there anyone already in the team that has relevant experience in test automation?
Yeah.
Because if you don't have anybody, like a developer with a coding background, of course they can start working on it, but they still need to learn it. That's a learning curve that you have to calculate.
No, okay, yeah.
Or you can bring in a test automation engineer or some services to have with the kickstarted. So that's the first thing I would think about. Like, how can I even like have that staffing? Because if I don't have the relevant expert there, I will probably fail or it will be too costly. I think that's the most important.
Yeah. 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 Okay. And then getting into problem thinking, what do we want to solve with that? And so what we talked at the beginning of the episode.
What are the challenges that we want to address, and what are the benefits of addressing those challenges?
Yeah. Great. Peter, thank you very much for all these insights. I think it's a good wrap up for test automation, how we can deal with it today, and not to focus so much on the tool, but more on the strategy, on the architecture. Think of what would you want to solve with the test automation, and to think in the pyramid style. I think that's a good way of dealing with that. Thank you that you shared this knowledge with us here in the podcast, and I wish you a nice rest of the conference here, and hope to see you again soon, and that we can chat around in another episode maybe.
and thank you very much for inviting me, and let's hope we meet each other either here in Europe or in the US.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Bye bye.
Thanks. Bye bye.